Welcome to today's episode. In this episode of Biz Trends, we're exploring the next generation's value and power. And to join us in studio, we have the one and only Ronan Ayres. He is a thought leader in entrepreneurship. He has played in the mental wellness space, in the innovation space, and he is best known for his work with Student Village and youth culture. Ronan is going to share his profound insights into how Gen Z, or Gen ZA now, are redefining leadership, embracing a collective hive mentality over traditional hierarchical models, and are opening up all sorts of new challenges and opportunities for the rest of us. So from healing past wounds to leading with intention, Ronan is at the forefront of understanding how Generation Z and ZA is ready to disrupt our world. So stick around as we unpack how businesses, leaders, and entrepreneurs can harness this change to not only stay relevant, but thrive in a world that is increasingly defined by collaboration. So, Ro, you've spent much of your career focusing on entrepreneurship and youth culture. Can you share a bit more about your personal journey and how you got to be an expert on the young, even with your somewhat advanced age?
Well, thanks, Bronwyn. This is something I actually haven't said publicly, but I worked out many years down the track that I was a middle pip growing up in the 80s and generally felt misunderstood. So that's a little cue to this generation and always the young generation. And I realized years later, one is I had an issue with authority, so I don't think I'd make a great employee. And I grew up in a family business that I didn't want to be part of. So I decided, well, the other alternative is for me to go my own way. And I always felt that youth were misunderstood, and maybe that was the great projection around my own issues. And so a friend and I decided to start a business called Student Village that really helps large brands to understand the young or youth markets. And we've spent almost 25 years doing that. And so I think I'm on my third generation now, so I've seen a lot.
You've seen a lot. You put in the hours, and you're also a parent, right? So you do have some, like, in-situ case studies to keep you on your toes.
Yeah, so I have three Z's and an A. So, yeah, I've got Gen ZA covered perfectly.
Can you just take a step back and explain to our listeners what Generation Z and A, or ZA together, are, in your opinion?
So in my opinion, Gen Z are generally the born frees. These are the youth and maybe not so young anymore, the young ones that were born in the new South Africa, so post-94. Generally, you look at 96 onwards, and now people are looking at from 2000 onwards. So it's roughly in that period that you have people that were born at that time, which are now basically in the workplace, those that were born then, and actually probably junior managers at the moment. So they're not kids anymore. And so the next generation starts somewhere around 2013, 2014, and that's Gen Alpha. And to sum them up, they're just a more intense version of Gen Z. And so Gen ZA would be the young generation of South Africa.
Well, as I like to put it, the difference between Z and A is that Z is all about chaos, whereas A is all about order. But a lot of the underlying values and shifts are the same. They're going to play out in slightly different ways. But let's get back to why these young people matter. Of course, young people matter. But what is it about young people today, or Generation ZA in particular, that is so primed to breach the status quo as we know it? Why does this cohort of young people feel so much more disruptive to businesses, to employers, and to parents too?
So I think they're all of the above to everyone. No one is spared from them. And what you get from this generation is that authenticity is their main driver. So they're almost on Tourette's in some ways, is that they're so unapologetically themselves that they live in a world without filters. So the way they want to work, the way they want to buy, the way they want to do things, they really, authenticity and individuality are huge drivers in how they approach the world. So they are really rewiring the way we do things, and for most of them, like you can take one example, mental health in the workplace. If they feel that their mental health is going to be compromised in any way, they'd much rather leave than actually deal with the systemic issue. So they'll tap out and rather sit on the couch and do their own thing versus sticking around. So they're not into the old way of doing things, and the tension that you have between old and new generations is all, which way is better, my way or your way, because I'm more experienced, and on the other side, I've got new ideas and you're antiquated. So really what you're seeing is the dinosaurs are really going to be endangered species again.
Well, that's always the case, isn't it? Every generation kind of plants its own seeds of destruction in the next, and on we go. But let's go back to those defining characteristics you mentioned, authenticity and individuality, which are very much core to what's going on with young people at the moment. But that authenticity, that cultural sort of kudos, it is also being enabled and empowered by macro trends, the environment that this generational cohort is growing up in. And from my perspective, the two overarching macro drivers of change that you simply can't avoid at the moment are that of globalization and automation. So at the center of that quite complicated Venn diagram, where we've got Generation ZA, we've got automation, we've got globalization, what are the opportunities emerging for South African in particular, but African in general, young people, given those drivers of change?
So if those are the major drivers of change, you've got to think, well, what are our unique dynamics? Well, we have over a third of the population are young people. A lot of them, you would say, over 40% are either unemployed or unemployed. It's not to say they don't have skills. And so if you've got all these macro trends that can play in your favor, they become the opportunity in themselves. So if they're certainly those that have got it together are really good at making themselves the brand. Mm-hmm. If they can make themselves the brand, they will have a following. The following becomes not only the audience, but they become this trusted channel. Mm-hmm. So if you can source goods for cheap, if you can work out your own ways of doing things and create your own brand around you, suddenly you're the distribution channel. So it's no longer the media. You are the media, the distribution channel, and the enabler for brands to do commerce.
Now, some cultural analysts have said that the era of brands is almost dead in the water, at least brands as we know them, brands from the advertising or mass media era, which were brands that were very top-down, told people how to think, what to want, how to dress, what sort of things to be you want to aspire towards. But that's kind of breaking down, and influence there is shifting from brand top-down towards influence grassroots up. Can you talk a bit about that power shift that's going on as to where the critical mass of consumer attention and therefore value is going to lie?
Yeah, so in this market, you have to be very careful about what they tell you and what they do, because there's always a disconnect there. But really what you're seeing is there's an underlying thing around trust. So they've been brought up or they've grown up in a world that there's so much fake in the world. So their radars are always looking for, like, to spot the fake or spot something that's not right, or the conspiracy theory, or all of that. Because we grew up in a world where we could assume certain truths. Here, they assume most things are fake. So this generation basically has an underlying issue with trust. They've got trust issues. And so to overcome that, and we've seen that in purchasing behavior, who do they look towards when they're purchasing an item? They look at friends and family, and they look at influencers they can trust. So those are generally not celebs. These are people that they know. Mm. They know that they're using these products because they believe in it and they can trust them. And so trust becomes a currency within this market. And so with all the macro things at play, trust through this decentralized distribution network is what's going to win in this market. Mm.
So decentralized brands, decentralized trust, and of course then connected to global supply chains, which is where it gets really, really interesting. If you can incorporate your identity, become an individual kind of business, right, with many different income streams based on your many different fan groups or your many different spheres of influence, you can then monetize that influence, even in a very small sphere of social connections, by tapping into global supply chains to deliver your personal brand identity on demand right from that factory in China that's been doing their memes these last few weeks in retaliation to the Trump tariffs, where they're showing you just what products are really worth and what they really cost when the brand premium has been stripped off. The person of influence, the individual of influence, can step into that space and claim a lot of that market share from formerly very big brands who are losing the ability to tap into the worlds and worldviews of young people with influence today. Am I connecting the dots in a similar way to the way you would have?
Am I making sense to you?
Am I making
sense
to you?
You're making absolute sense. And so, you know, what you have with this market is that those that, and I say again, that can get it together, literally have the world at their thumbs. Because they can literally do this from their couch, and this is what they've been wanting to do for years. So if you had to say, what's the alternative? Would you like a job? Or would you like to create a disruptor, challenger brand that's linked to your personal brand, where you're the distribution network, et cetera, et cetera? Or do I want to work 3 to 5 days a week at a desk at your company with not much upside? Well, the way they're looking at it is saying, well, maybe for now, it's very useful to have you as the company because you are my security. You'll pay my debit orders while I get my side hustle going. As soon as my side hustle, which is all of that which you spoke about, as soon as that gets enough lift and momentum, you're out. Cheers. Mm. I'm going my way. So it's almost like the workplace has become a transit station until I get my other thing going.
Investing in yourself, in your own personal identity, incorporating that kind of becomes a hedge against a very uncertain world, right? Because that's something that's entirely within your control, and the people within your sphere of influence, even if it's quite on a small scale, just among family and friends that you have a N-1 kind of relationship with, that becomes something you can count on and something that you can translate into real value. But how then, this is the tricky question, do traditional brands and businesses play in this space? So from my perspective, power in the retail marketplace has shifted from both retailers and brands. Not so long ago, retailers were trying to claw back power from brands by white labeling those products and selling them to those consumers at a discount. Of course, platforms in the online space have also tried to undermine the value of brands. And now, of course, you've got global factories literally pulling back the curtain on what brand value really is and offering opportunities for creators and for people of influence, rather than influencers, of course, to connect directly with those supply chains and sell whatever they can imagine, enabled by artificial intelligence, directly from global factories to their fans and families and circles of influence again. So where then do traditional brands fit into this picture? Is there a place for them in your perspective? Or what do they need to do to shapeshift in order to connect with someone of this mindset where I am incorporated and I'm distrustful of your brand, I'm distrustful of your business, I'm distrustful of the entire idea of capitalism, in fact, and I can only rely on myself and the people that I know and trust and connect with. So answer the hard question there.
Oh, that's a big job while I'm trying to get Lululemon out my head while you were talking. So the thing is, brands have to stay relevant. If they want even a sniff of this market, they have to stay relevant. A few years ago, you would have said brands that are relevant are ones that are kinder to the environment, have social justice values, believe in diversity and inclusion, et cetera, the whole long list.
But that's millennials, and we're quite old now.
Yeah, well, that was almost up until January.
Yes.
And so what we see now is, and it's come through clearly in our research, saying that young people don't necessarily want to be friends with brands. This is about a relationship of convenience. So can you provide me with value? Can you provide me with a good experience? Are you relevant to me? And do you elevate my personal brand? So that's, it's become a lot more transactional as opposed to we're going to do life together. It's like we're going to do this chapter together. And if it works out, maybe there'll be another chapter. So there's no real loyalty by design. It's more transactional. If it works out for me now, cool. Otherwise, I'll change my mind. So it's quite a fickle, fluid generation. So it's very tricky to kind of expect loyalty from them. And in terms of other ways is really get down to grassroots levels. Look at those nano and micro influencers that really wield power in this decentralized network. There's a plethora of them. There are thousands of them that run their own side hustles, their own businesses, that have real credibility in their micro communities. And so it's less about mass media. It's more about being super relevant to their world in their smaller communities.
And having a real relationship. So it's this idea that the individual doesn't need the brand to give them identity, but rather the brand needs to support the identity that I am curating. Again, the power shifts there, right, to the individual. So there's almost a humility that's required with brands to play in the space. And what about adaptability? Because very similar to what I was talking about with creators being able to use AI to come up with products and services and clothing they might want to wear, from imagination to screen, from screen to pipeline, then what do brands need to give up in terms of flexibility of co-creating or even world building with this kind of a new consumer?
So just picture yourself as a brand manager sitting somewhere maybe in Dubai, and you're dealing with a South African or African audience, and you get this new campaign and you're a sneaker brand and you want the same content to go out because you want things to look consistent amongst all your markets. And guess what? It lands flat because you're using celeb influencers and using the same billboards and using everything for this whole multi-regional campaign. Where the trick is actually to give up some of that, that need to be so super rigid and consistent, and rather look at how you can kind of blend in with local nuance and write down to these young people with real influence for them to express their creativity their way and to take your brand with for the journey, as opposed to kind of enforcing it on them. You more like it's an invitation saying, well, show me what you can do. I'm with you. And it's almost like believing in them, and that will work. Like we've seen, our research tells us that these influencers will work like 25 times harder. You'll get so much more effort and return because of that one thing. I believe in you. Show me what you got.
This idea of being open up to remix or to allowing creative control and creative direction to reside with the person of influence rather than with your creative director that's imposing things kind of top down. So this is a diametric shift from what branding was not so long ago. The way branding is still taught in school, which is about having control and having consistency, whereas now it's about flexibility and relinquishing that control. This is different from the sort of millennial era, kind of like allow the customer to design the sneaker, right? To choose what color the tick is on the Nike swoop on the side of the shoe. This is a whole different way of relinquishing control and working with people bottom up rather than top down. But I suppose my question for you there is, what is your insight in terms of the nuance there, where there are any particular opportunities or challenges brands should be aware of when it comes to Generation ZA in the African, South African context as opposed to the global cohort? So the similarities, obviously, the things we've spoken about here, because automation and globalization are borderless, but what are the unique nuances that we should be paying attention to from a business perspective in the African Gen ZA context?
Yeah, so remembering that they're not homogenous, they're not all the same, which is similar globally, but what you have in the Gen ZA market is it represents the South African economy brilliantly. And the thing is you have the haves, I guess. So you have a small pocket that are almost wealthy relative to the rest of the country, and then it kind of, there's a long tail that goes all the way down. And so really what you're looking at is shifting priorities. And so as a brand, you've got to know that a young person is sourcing their money from multiple places. They're always
crowdsourcing. Incorporated individual again, right?
Yeah.
Lots of income streams, even if those streams are quite small.
Yeah. Sometimes family, sometimes the government, family, side hustles, part-time jobs, you name it. They're sourcing from everywhere. And there is a pecking order. And what we've seen a shift in the last few years is that things have become so expensive for the basics that the basics have become the new luxe. So if you look at, say, stuff like food and transport will take up a third to half their monthly budget. So even though they're saving, and we've seen up to, like, on average almost 1800 a month, question is, are they saving to spend or saving for a rainy day? That's a whole other conversation. But really the nuance here is that because things have become so expensive, is that the basics are the new luxury. But in any given month, what you're going to see is a young person will say, well, I'll have less of that, of the basics, while I'm either saving up or I really want something now. So I want clothes, I want sneakers, I want a new phone, I need a new laptop, all the things that I need to have. So it's a generation that want to have it all, may not have the means, but they'll make a plan through either reprioritization, sourcing from their multiple sources, or, as we see now, they'll buy now and pay later.
Fine. That's very South African. It's a make a plan generation and a make a plan country, right? This is the resourceful sort of attitude that we've brought our families up with in South Africa for generations. And I think that probably sets young Africans up at an advantage of the degrowing global West, right? Where young people have not been brought up with resilience or with make a plan kind of attitude. But I do want to pick up on one of the things you said, and that is the sort of investing or saving up for things like laptops, cameras, and clothes, of course. And I think that just reinforces a lot of the sort of threads you were talking about today, this idea that you are an incorporated individual. Every individual is required to run themselves like a business. And part of that running yourself like a business, in order to have influence to trade for cash, for kind, you need to look the part, right? So investing in your personal appearance is not a frivolous act at all. It becomes a means of survival, because looking good in the right place could be the career break you need to land the deal with that business or to connect with that community. And I think that just sort of reinforces this thing that we have to build our individual brands, but this is not the millennial Gen X way of building your personal brand by saying the right things on the right platforms. It's about showing up and connecting everywhere you are seen, because that connection, that personal connection with your family, your friends, the people that see you, that interact with you, that work with you, is your ticket to that next opportunity.
Absolutely. So a number of years ago, the way you looked was all about I've arrived.
Mm.
You know, so I may be 18, but I'm going to be hanging out. I'm going to be looking as if I'm 25. I'm going to be in the right places, doing the right things. And it's all about kind of forward projecting the life that I want. Now, and we used to call it a bottom-up approach. I first wanted sneakers, clothes, then a phone, etc. It's now kind of switched. It's top-down, so I want clothes, then sneakers, then electronics. And that's after taking the basics into account. And really, it's about, this is not necessarily a uniform that makes me look good. This is me. So me is actually bigger than the brands that I'm wearing. They're just enhancing the me.
And me, that brand, is my currency. It is my credit card.
Yeah. And I guess maybe from the previous question, here's one other health warning for brands out there, is that many years ago, and when you speak to brand managers and say, yeah, let's just get a few students to represent our brand, well, they are a lot more discerning these days than they were before, because now they look at brands according to relative to their own personal brand. So they've got their own matrix to decide, well, does that brand represent the me? Because if there is any conflict there, so they're interviewing the brand just as much as the brand wants them. So we're getting a lot of no's. That doesn't work for me. That brand doesn't suit my personal image or my values. And that's a massive, massive shift.
Again, that power balance is just decentralized. So you've got to be looking in very different places, and the old strategies are simply not going to work going forward, not with what's available on the table at the moment. But as a closing question, from your perspective as someone that deals with the future in the form of the next and present generation, what is your one, perhaps, biggest projection going forward as to the most likely opportunity that you don't want to miss out on the next sort of 10 years? So what is the wave that you don't want to miss surfing when it comes to connecting with this generation?
So when I speak to brands, I speak to people, and I tell them, if you want to know about the future, just watch young people. So you can watch which platforms they're on, how they do things, what they want to do. And so really, I think in 10 years' time, this generation won't want to own anything. They would just want probably a lot of money. A lot of it will be in crypto. And I think they'll be running their own businesses. I think we're birthing a generation filled with hustlers, that there'll be a large percentage of entrepreneurs that will come out of this. And these entrepreneurs will disrupt the corporate space. So you're going to see new businesses that are going to solve today's problems, both social and financial, commercial, etc., across industries. And the way they're going to do things is probably in a more equitable manner. So what we're seeing is a redress in how we work, how things are earned, and who gets what. And I can't say if all goes according to plan, because nothing's going according to plan at the moment. But what they really want deep down inside is they want to do well. They want their community to do well, and they want the world to be a better place, because they've never grown up in a world that is a nice place.
Wow. So that's a kind of a capitalist-socialist combination, neither here nor there, somewhere in the middle, and almost kind of looking towards digital co-ops like you have in the UK. We have your community garden and your community shop in the physical space. This is, of course, just modernizing it and giving more people a stake in having that ownership over their own identity and their own future. It's not tied to the tenuous idea of having a job or having someone look after you in the form of a grant or or a parent, or again, that employment contract.
Exactly.
Thank you so much. That's a wrap on today's episode. A huge thank you to Ronan Ayres for sharing his insights into the power of the collective that is Gen ZA. So it's clear that this next generation is going to disrupt our status quo. And we hope that you've enjoyed today's conversation and picked up a few hints on how to cope with the change ahead on the what, who, when, where, and how of our local and global trends. If today's discussion inspired you to rethink your approach to leadership, to collaboration, or to the next generation, don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow us on Wrapped Biz Trends TV. You can also catch us on Biz Community's official website, Biz Trends TV digital channels, The Real Network, YouTube platforms, and of course on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. So on behalf of myself, Bronwyn Williams, and my guests, along with, of course, Biz Community and Rap Creative, thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next time with more exciting trends and innovations at the center of our African continent and the world at large.